Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we open our show with an update on the search for Sally Estabrook, a missing woman with Alzheimer's last seen at a campground in Julian way back on Sunday, October 5th. We'll be speaking with her son-in-law, Dave Mustaine, on some theories of how Sally Estabrook could have vanished without a trace and how he hopes the public can help to bring her home. We'll have a report on some no-bid contracts issued by Covered California that are drawing scrutiny. Also on the health front, we'll have some shocking results of a survey conducted by the National Nurses Association showing just how unprepared most hospitals across America are for an Ebola outbreak. Plus, you'll hear about a blood purifier being tested as an Ebola treatment, and it's manufactured by a company right here in San Diego. You'll also hear why a consumer group says TV ads featuring CAL FIRE that claim Proposition 2 will improve funding for firefighting at the local level are stretching the truth. On our Brewbeat report, hear about a proposal to regulate the location of brewery tasting rooms in San Diego. Larry Zinter from San Diego Comic Fest will be a guest today, sharing details about this weekend's three-day Comic Fest and how it differs from Comic-Con. Our top newsmaker today in the second half hour is La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid, who is seeking re-election after serving for nearly 25 years. His opponent, Councilman Mark Arapostathis, sat down for an interview published on our website, but declined to participate in a radio interview. He's also refused to debate Mayor Madrid, who will talk to us today about his record of accomplishments and why he believes La Mesa deserves a full-time mayor, not a part-time leader. We'll have all these stories today and more, so be sure to stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the search that continues for missing woman Sally Estabrook, an Alzheimer's patient who is 76 years old and has been missing since Sunday, October the 5th. She was last seen at the Pines Anita RV campground in Julian by her husband, who went to take a shower, and when he returned, she was missing. Sally is 5 feet 4 inches tall. She weighs 145 pounds with blonde hair and blue eyes. And she may respond to her name even though she has Alzheimer's. And now I have on the phone her son-in-law, Dave Mustaine, who's going to fill us in on the latest. And Dave Mustaine, by the way, is the lead singer in the band Megadeth. Can you bring us up to speed? What is the latest information that you're hearing from the sheriffs on this case?
Well, the latest information that we heard was a possible sighting, but there have been numerous possible sightings, and they've all turned out to be dead ends. Yeah, the good thing is that public awareness has been raised when the San Diego Sheriff's Search and Rescue Division was looking for Sally in the beginning. They just did a marvelous job, and they stuck to what they know, Even guys from Texas were marveling at how great they do. Because we were looking at people in Texas bringing in drones and everything. We just cannot find her. She vanished.
Wow. So what are the possibilities here? I mean, if she is still out there and okay, what do they think? Could she possibly have accepted a ride from someone? Or what are the theories?
Well, she had a leg injury. It was minute, but she was not 100% mobile. Mm-hmm. She was 76 with severe Alzheimer's, and she was up to the top of a mountain in Julian at a campground. There's two ways in, and that's it. So it went from her being at that campsite to her being nowhere. They scoured 60 square miles with helicopters and an additional 32 miles by foot. And our belief is that she got picked up by somebody in a car. And my plea is that whoever did this deed of kindness for this old woman, don't worry about the fact that she's missing. Nobody's mad. If you have some reason that you don't want the authorities to know who you are, just tell us where she is. You know, there's a lot of possibilities that somebody may have a prior and they did something good, but that they can't, you know, be associated with the authorities. Sure. It could be a Latino family that has some undocumented family member and they're afraid of being deported, but they did a kind act. It could be a hardcore criminal who picked her up and he just, you know, because even the worst of criminals have moms too, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not as far-fetched as it sounds. Actually, believe it or not, once upon a time, I picked up a missing Alzheimer's person. I was heading onto the freeway on-ramp with my husband up in North County, and there was this old man in his pajamas and slippers walking down the middle of the on-ramp looking very red in the face and distressed. And,
oh, no.
Yeah, we stopped to ask if he was okay, and he couldn't remember what his name was when we asked him, so it was pretty obvious what was going on. And then he asked us if we'd give him a ride to a casino. Well, of course, we didn't. We invited him to come in and sit down, and I stepped out, and I called the sheriff, and they came, and fortunately, you know, it took him. So it's very possible, I think, that something like that might have happened. Where was your mother from, Dave? And are there any places that she might have wanted to go if she was lucid enough to be able to explain that to a passing motorist?
Well, she's my mother-in-law, and she was from that Pennsylvania area is where she hails from. And she'd lived recently along the coast in California for as long as I know, in Upland Rancho Cucamonga, that area there, and then most recently down in Fallbrook where my wife and children live with me, and that's been for quite some time now. There's some place that she might go. Gosh, I don't know. It's so limited because of the severity of her Alzheimer's. She was only going to her church and coming over to our house, and the sad thing is that, you know, I know that Bob, when he took her camping, he didn't plan on or expect something like this to happen, and it's just mind-blowing. You know, and we're not asking the public to have pity on Sally because she's my mother-in-law. It's just because she's somebody's mom, you know, and if I, like you, if I was driving down the freeway and I saw somebody in the condition that had, you said that you had helped, I would have done the same thing.
Yeah. What is the phone number that people should call if they think that they might have seen her or spoken with her?
911, that's it. Just call 911. We spotted Sally Estabrook. Everybody that's in the authorities down in the San Diego County and surrounding areas know about this right now. And I'm so grateful to the Red Cross and to the sheriffs of San Diego, San Bernardino, Orange, and Riverside County. They all converged on this campground.
Yeah, there's been dog teams and helicopters, and they really have pulled out a lot of stops trying to find her.
Yeah, and that's why it just seems like she just vanished, you know? I mean, these guys are the best there is in our state, and, you know, not a trace, not a footprint. The dogs couldn't get a scent off her, nothing.
Yeah, normally dog teams will find someone if they're, you know, if they're out there and they know exactly where they disappeared from, so that is very surprising, I agree. I've seen some missing person photos for her posted around some of the shops and stores and restaurants around town. If listeners want to help out and they want to download posters and put them around town, where can they find those online?
Her Facebook page, I believe, is hashtag Find Sally San Diego. It may just be Find Sally, and I misheard what they said.
And the San Diego Sheriff website also. If you Google San Diego Sheriff and you go in the press releases section, I know that they have her photo and, you know, posters and things in there as well.
Mm-hmm. It's on just about every local news site and radio site in San Diego, too.
Right.
Just been so grateful for the community helping us.
What can
we still are holding out hope. We're hoping that, you know, she got an abandoned vehicle or, you know, a house that was a vacation home that somebody left unlocked and she got in. It was just, you know, I mean, I know it sounds far-fetched at this point, but, you know, you gotta keep the faith and you gotta have hope.
Definitely.
I especially want to thank Don Parker for the job that he's done. He's just done an amazing job.
Head of the search and rescue team, Sergeant Parker, yes. Well, Dave, I want to thank you for calling in this difficult time, and certainly our hearts go out to you and your family, and we all
hope
that Sally Estabrook will be found safely soon.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Is there anything else you wanted to share or tell us about her?
Well, she, like I said, she's non-communicative. If you see her, if you know where she's at, just call 911. And we, again, like we said, we know she could be some homeless people could have found her and taken her into the community because, you know, as terrible as their situation is, there still is some humanity within the community of homeless people. And who knows, maybe somebody that sees a group of homeless people see her, you know, some of the adult hospitals and shelters that they have. Maybe she was near a shelter and walked up next to another patient. Anybody that works in those places, look amongst your patients, see if there's somebody that should not be there that's there.
Yeah, those are very good suggestions, Dave. Well, we certainly wish you all the best, and we're all going to be hoping that your mother-in-law will be found soon. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. If we find out anything, we'll let you know so that your listeners can be relieved. And thank you again. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Okay.
Cheers. Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine. White had covered California award $184 million in no-bid contracts, including millions to consulting companies with ties to executives on the covered California board. For instance, $4.2 million went to the Tory Group, whose founder once worked with covered California's executive director, Peter Lee. And other contracts went to a subsidiary of a firm that Lee once led. Those are the findings of a report by Consumer Watchdog, which has called on Attorney General Kamala Harris to investigate. Covered California has claimed that the uncompetitive contracts were needed to meet deadlines for creating insurance exchanges under the Federal Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. But Consumer Watchdog's President Jamie Court said, "This isn't about speed, it's about being opaque," the Sacramento Bee reports. She adds, for $4.2 million to flow to a former associate without any oversight is the antithesis of open government and good government.
The National Nurses Union is calling for mandatory national standards on handling Ebola and suspected Ebola patients. A national survey by the group has found that 80% of nurses surveyed say their hospital has not communicated any policy on Ebola to the nursing staff. After news on Sunday that the first U.S. nurse has now tested positive for the deadly Ebola virus in Texas, the National Nurses United is calling for all hospitals to have in place the highest standard of optimal protections. That includes hazmat suits and hands-on training to protect all registered nurses and other hospital personnel. National Nurses United, which has been surveying nurses across the U.S., calls on U.S. hospitals to immediately upgrade emergency preparations for Ebola. As of Monday, 2,200 registered nurses at over 750 facilities in 46 states and the District of Columbia have responded to the survey. The current findings show some troubling results. 85% of nurses surveyed say their hospital has not provided education on Ebola with the ability for nurses to interact and ask questions. 40% say their hospital has insufficient current supplies of eye protection, such as face shields or side shields with goggles for daily use on their unit. 38% say there are insufficient supplies of fluid-resistant impermeable gowns in their hospital. 39% say their hospital does not have plans to equip isolation rooms with plastic-covered mattresses and pillows and to discard all linens after use. Only 8% said they were aware that their hospital does have such a plan in place. The nurses group wants all U.S. hospitals to immediately implement a full emergency preparedness plan for Ebola and other disease outbreaks. That includes full training of hospital personnel, along with proper protocols and training materials for responding to outbreaks with the ability for nurses to ask questions, adequate supplies of hazmat suits and other protective equipment, properly equipped isolation rooms to assure patient, visitor, and staff safety, proper procedures for disposal of medical waste and linens after use. The group is also calling for significant increases in provision of aid, financial, personnel, and protective equipment from the U.S. government and other governments, as well as private corporate interests to the nations in West Africa directly affected to help contain and stop the spread of Ebola. In an interview on MSNBC, National Nurses Union CEO Deborah Berger said part of the problem is America's fragmented healthcare system. Private hospitals can set their own rules on protocols, protection, isolation and handling of wastes. She calls for a national set of mandatory standards, adding that if the U.S. had a public health care system, quote, we would be in a much better place. She added, our survey clearly shows that we are not ready in America's hospitals. Now, East County Magazine, after reading this report, has contacted Grossmont Hospital, the only major hospital in San Diego's inland region, to ask what preparations, equipment, and training the facility provides in case an Ebola patient or suspected Ebola case should ever be found here. And we will be reporting back on our findings. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barena with the health report from East County Magazine. A blood filtration treatment made by a San Diego company has now joined the fight against Ebola. Athlon Medical announced Tuesday the first use of its hemopurifier therapy on a patient infected with Ebola virus, Times of San Diego reports. The hemopurifier is a biofiltration device that can rapidly eliminate viruses and proteins from the circulatory system of infected individuals. The treatment was administered at Frankfurt University Hospital in Germany to a Ugandan doctor, a World Health Organization worker who contracted Ebola in Sierra Leone. The company is the second from San Diego to offer a treatment for Ebola amid the rapidly spreading epidemic. In August, MAP Biopharmaceuticals drug ZMAP was used to treat the first American Ebola patients. Jim Joyce, Athlon's founder and CEO, says the details on the patient's response to therapy will be disclosed once hospital officials deem it appropriate to report an update on the patient's condition. The device can be used in dialysis machines at hospitals and clinics to purify blood and purge viruses from the system, not only in Ebola, but other pandemic threats and chronic viral conditions such as HIV and hepatitis C. Athlon has indicated it will soon begin clinical studies in the U.S. on the treatment.
A television ad featuring CAL FIRE director Ken Pimlott advises voters that a yes vote on Propositions 1 and 2 will protect the water and the fire services we need, unquote, for the future. The ad features video of wildfires and suggests that the measures are needed to make sure that California improves its water infrastructure to be better prepared for drought and to assure that firefighting budgets won't be cut in future economic downturns. Let's listen to that ad.
Just a few years ago, when the economy went bust, cuts to local fire service were devastating. We can't go back. Not with the worst drought in history and fires raging north and south. Props 1 and 2 protect the water and the fire services we need. Prop 1 saves water for droughts. Prop 2 makes the legislature save in good times so that firefighters don't come off the line when times are bad. Vote yes on 1 and 2. Save water, save money. Save California.
According to the Sacramento Bee, this ad is somewhat misleading. It's true that Prop 1 would improve water supply and infrastructure. It's also true that Prop 2, the Budget Stabilization Act, would require the state to fund a budget reserve and allow spending during a natural disaster. But, the Sacramento Bee reports, there is nothing in the measure that would send money to local agencies to ensure that firefighters don't come off the line, as this ad implies. And that sounds an awful lot like Proposition 172 from a few years ago that featured ads with scary images of wildfires and promised money for firefighting. But when San Diego got its share, it used 100% of it to fund courts and sheriff's services, with zero money going into firefighting. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, my special guest is Larry Zinter, and Larry is on the board of directors for San Diego Comic Fest, not Comic-Con, Comic Fest, and they have a very special event, the third annual Comic Fest, coming into town this weekend, Friday through Sunday, October 17th through 19th, at the Town and Country Hotel. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Now, I understand this is the third annual San Diego Comic Fest, and that its roots include some of the people who are from East County. Tell us a little bit about how this whole thing got started.
A group of the founders of Comic-Con decided that they wanted to go back to a more intimate, more social gathering of comic fans, East County, North County, and so they got together and started working on it, and out of that came Comic Fest, which is here exclusively in San Diego.
And how will it be different from Comic-Con?
You can have lunch with the guests, there are seminars, there's not the long lines that you usually get, very sociable, very outgoing.
And some of the special things coming up at this particular Comic Fest include, I understand, a Twilight Zone tribute, a 100th birthday party for Superman. Tell us a little bit about some of these activities.
Okay, for the Twilight Zone, we have Rod Sterling's daughter coming down who is premiering her dad's new book about the Twilight Zone. We have one of the original authors of the Twilight Zone who will be in attendance, George Clayton Johnson. We have the 100th anniversary of Superman. Co-author Jerry Siegel's daughter will be our very special guest this weekend. And the Comic Fest is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And there's also a Ghostbusters 30th anniversary event.
Correct. We have one of the artists who worked on the Marshmallow Man and some of the illustrators for Ghostbusters. We've got quite a lot of activities going. We have a blood drive. We have an auction going. And
science fiction, steampunk animation, all kinds of things. Live art performances.
Yes, we also have an artist gallery where artists from all over the country come and do their artwork. One of our special guests, his first name is Lee, and he's an illustrator for Lucasfilms.
That sounds like a very exciting event, and I see that there's also a masked ball so people can come in costume.
Yes.
Well, that sounds exciting. How did you get involved in this whole thing, Larry? You're a Lakeside resident. Tell us how you wound up getting on the board for Comic Fest.
Well, one of my friends has a used bookstore in El Cajon, and I happened to catch a flyer 3 years ago. And I went, and I volunteered. And since then, I have been able to join the board and help out with the planning and the distribution of flyers and pamphlets for the show.
Very good. And where can people go to get more information about this weekend's San Diego Comic Fest?
sdcomicfest.org or on our Facebook page at San Diego Comic Fest.
Excellent. I want to thank you very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
This is Ed Barrena with East County Magazine's Brew Beat. San Diego is gaining a reputation nationally as one of America's leading craft brewing cities. Breweries have been opening up beer tasting rooms countywide, including in urban and suburban areas, not just at breweries in industrial locations. Now the city of San Diego is considering changing its development code to require that the community be allowed to voice its views when a brewery seeks to open up a secondary off-site tasting room. That process could take up to 6 months, Voice of San Diego reports. Twisted Manzanita Ales and Stone Brewing Company are among the well-known breweries that have expanded off-site, beyond their location, to reach customers directly. The proposed rule change would assure that a brewery's tasting room at its main brewing location can open without these additional reviews in industrial areas. The matter is expected to come before council by April. But even with the six-month review process to get a permit and allow public comments, the lucrative brewing business is likely to continue to lure brewers to cash in on opportunities to open new tasting rooms. In fact, the city has agreed to partially subsidize expansions for several local brewers in order to support the burgeoning beer-making industry and create new jobs in the region.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we're going to be talking about the La Mesa mayoral race and speaking with La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid. Art has served as mayor for over 24 years since 1990 and on the council since 1981. He's also served as chair of the San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, and as president of the League of California Cities San Diego Division. Altogether, Art has served on over 125 different boards and commissions. His opponent is Councilman Mark Rapostathos, or Dr. A as he's known. He's a lifelong La Mesa resident, teacher in the La Mesa Spring Valley School District, and has a history of community service that includes running a junior theater program. Now, we invited both candidates to be interviewed on the show, and unfortunately, Dr. Rapostathos has declined to do a radio interview, although he did agree to an interview for our website, and you'll be able to find that posted at eastcountymagazine.org. Mayor Madrid has challenged his opponent to a debate, but Dr. Rapostathos has refused, not only on our show, but to debate him in any forum. Dr. A told me that he has 23 events in 29 days and prefers meeting voters in person by walking door-to-door instead of debating. So you can take that for what you will, but that's the situation. So we're sorry we won't have the opportunity to have both candidates on the radio, listeners, for you to hear, but we are very honored to welcome La Mesa's Mayor Art Madrid to our show. Mayor Madrid, thank you for joining us today.
Miriam, thank you for the invitation.
Now, as we mentioned, you've been in office for many, many years here in La Mesa. What do you consider to be your most significant strengths and accomplishments in office?
Well, without sounding immodest, the things that we've been able to accomplish for the city are tangible issues. For example, more recently, you can look at the three public safety buildings that we have, police station, fire station, and then we have a library and a post office. And then the other things we've talked about is making sure that the infrastructure, and that's something that the public can't see because nine times out of ten it's underground, but the infrastructure is in great shape. Our streets and roads are well maintained. Those are the kinds of things that we do. More importantly, though, I think that I'm a firm believer in giving access to the residents, and to that degree, I've initiated six new boards and commissions since I became mayor, and we have a community involvement. It's called civic engagement, and so we have a number of volunteers that through the years have saved those citizens about $15 million because that's work that we didn't have to pay for. They go ahead and do that work themselves.
Very good. Thank you. A key issue that's distinguishing candidates from one another in this campaign is how they envision the role of the city council and the mayor and what a leadership role actually should look like. Art, can you please define leadership in your view? What does it mean to you?
Well, the mayor itself, the role of the mayor is the chief elected official of the city. And in my capacity as mayor, what we do, all the official documentation, signing, things of that nature. But more importantly, we represent the city and every kinds of activities. And so to that degree, the leadership that we provide is based on your style and based on assessing what the public wants to hear. And more importantly, addressing key issues that the public is concerned about. So leadership is one of being able to listen, to respond in a timely fashion, to collaborate, and to make sure that you can compromise those things because it becomes a better community when you do those things.
I would like to know whether you see the role of mayor as a full-time or part-time position, how many hours you put into the job. And I ask that specifically because your opponent, while he has certainly served on the city council, has a full-time job as a teacher. He also works many night rehearsals, and he has indicated that he believes he can do this as a part-time job with a lot of help from staff. How many hours do you put in on a regular basis, on a typical day, typical week as mayor, Art? And do you believe that it's realistic to think this can be done in fewer hours?
Candidly, it's labeled as a part-time job, but if you really want to be efficient and effective and provide some leadership and some programs for the citizens of La Mesa, it really is a full-time job. I probably average about 60 to 70 hours a week. That includes the weekends and going to events and functions of that nature. And the one thing that I do is make it a point that every weekend I drive through at least a quarter of our cities. I've broken them down in quarters and drive through there and see just exactly what needs to be done, how things are taking place, and more importantly, make sure that you're there being responsive to the needs of the people. It's difficult to say that it's a part-time job because I average about between 35 and 41 either calls or visits on a monthly basis from citizens who call and want to address a specific issue that impacts them and the city.
Yeah, accessibility is an interesting issue. You mentioned that you take these calls from the public. I could not find contact information on Dr. Rapostathis' campaign website, which begs the question, we'll have to ask him, I guess, of how accessible he will be to the public once he's elected. But I know I've seen you go around town passing out a business card with your cell phone number on it, so you're, I think, exceptionally accessible in terms of public officials.
One of the biggest concerns that the public has is that they can't get hold of their elected officials, or once they get elected, first of all, as candidates and either incumbents or candidates, when they run for office, they're very cordial with the public. They're always mm-hmm. accessible and everything else when they're running for office. Once they get in office, they get calls from the public and they seldom respond. That's not the same issue with me. I make it a point to be accessible because I've asked for their support and I'm now responding to their needs, if you will. The issue is accessibility is probably the most important thing that we have to offer as elected officials. So it's important that we make sure that everybody has access to us, whether dropping by at City Hall or calling us on our cell phone or even our home phone, or even I've had people drop by my neighborhood, mm-hmm. knock on the door and start sharing some concerns, and we listen to them and then take action on them.
Okay, thank you for sharing that. Is there benefit, and if so, what type of benefits in participating in outside organizations such as the League of California Cities, the National Conference of Mayors, or any other organizations? This has been an issue with the council recently where there's been some funding cutbacks. I know you've gone to some of these in the past and there's been some cuts. Do you hope to attend these outside meetings, or do you view this as an area that staff could handle, as some have suggested?
Well, first of all, as an elected official, your responsibility is to represent your city. And there are a number of national and civic and regional organizations where it's critical that we have some elected representation. Now, one of the things that happens is that it's called best practices, for lack of a better word. When you meet with other individuals throughout the U.S. Conference of Mayors or the League of California Cities or the National Conference of Cities, you interact with other elected officials. We all basically have the same challenges in our respective cities. They may be a different priority, but you dialogue and ask them how they've addressed those issues, and you come back with ideas and thoughts that you pass on to staff, and they go ahead and act on those.
Some in council meetings have suggested travel is not needed because the meetings can be done over the phone or by Skype these days. Let technology take care of that for us. Do you agree or disagree?
I disagree. You have to go ahead and, when you're at these meetings, you have to sit down and have dialogues with your colleagues and peers from throughout the country. The issue of dialoguing or having a conversation over the phone or Skype is superficial, and it really doesn't get to the nut of the whole discussion that you're having.
With a city that is fully built out like La Mesa, which is just 9 square miles, redevelopment and infill are very important issues that the council will be facing. We've certainly seen controversies recently over the proposed Park Station high-rise, for example. La Mesa's already seen some major redevelopment, as you mentioned, the brand-new library, the police station, and now the downtown streetscape that's underway. I would like to hear your definition of smart growth and what it means to you. What makes it smart? And how would it fit in with the city, the downtown village, and La Mesa's historic character?
Well, let me add just a little bit of historical perspective. You may see now Fletcher Parkway, where we have Costco and we have the Chili's and we have all those restaurants. That place used to be a underdeveloped, underutilized place, and I took the leadership to make sure that we made that an economic viable program for the city.
I remember it was Quonset Huts and
there were Quonset
Hut dealers, and
we had RCP was a brick and mortar place,
right.
So we had them there. The only way you could cross from Fletcher Parkway to that development back there was through a railroad car that was our bridge, where they had laid the railroad car on its side, and that's cars went over there. But the reality, getting back to redevelopment currently, it is a city that we have to protect its character and its heritage in terms of what we're going to be dealing with in terms of the height, in terms of the density. Those are the kinds of things that we have to address, and each different project has to be discussed on its own merits.
There you go. There is a concept called placemaking that has to do with creating spaces where people can interact more with the environment. Can you elaborate a little bit about that and your views on that idea?
Placemaking is a new concept. It's been around for a while, but it's a new concept where what you really want to do is encourage the public to interact with each other, to walk in the village and things of that nature. To my perspective, we already have some degree of placemaking in the area. We're now spending $6 million in upgrading the village, the downtown village, which is only five blocks. There's a lot of activity. A lot of people are walking there. Incidentally, because of the things that I've been promoting in safe walk to schools, things of that nature, with about $7 million in budgets, we have been designated by two organizations as the most walkable community in the region. That includes all 18 cities.
That's very, very impressive.
Placemaking really addresses the issues of encouraging people to get out and interact with each other, and even pocket parks, things of that nature.
Okay. What is that streetscape going to include, by the way, when it's done? Can you give us a highlight or two?
We have an example of what it's going to appear like on our webpage, but let me share what we're doing. The downtown village has not been addressed or repaired or any major work in 34 years. We haven't done anything of that. We replaced all the trees, which were creating some huge problems for us. We're replacing all the lighting. We're replacing the sidewalks, and we're replacing the roads and making them much safer. So it's going to be a significant magnet when we finish. It's going to be attracting not only visitors, but it's going to be providing a greater investment for the downtown business community.
Very good. What do you view as the value and the purpose of the general plan and the ordinances, and should they be negotiable, do you believe? And what are some kinds of circumstances where you might think that exceptions could be warranted to the rules?
One of the things, a general plan is mandated by the state, and it's really the blueprint for where you're going. We just finished upgrading our general plan in 2012. What we've done in a case like that is we had all kinds of community input. It's not done by staff or the council. We make sure, of course, we have a voice in that, but we want to make sure that the people who live here have access and give us their version of what a city ought to look like. And to that degree, in this year's general plan, I have been instrumental in adding three new elements to the plan. Plans really have the elements, and you focus on each specific element as to what they're going to be doing. But I had parks and open space, I had sustainability, and we also had health and wellness to those plans.
Okay. La Mesa's been around for 100 years, just celebrated its centennial, and one of the longtime tenants has been Grossmont Center, which recently celebrated its 50th anniversary. But the lease for Grossmont Center is coming up for renewal, and I understand that the original owners, the Cushman family, are taking it over and will be coming before the council soon with whatever plans they have for it. What can you tell us about that, and what is your vision for it, if you have any hand as mayor in sort of guiding what may happen with Grossmont Center? What would you like to see done, and what do you think will be done?
Well, Miriam, I had a very positive working relationship with the Cushman family for the last 40 years. Larry and Steve Cushman, and you're right, the lease is up, and they're going to come back and take it over. In our discussions that we've had with them, this is an issue that's been a very viable project for them. As a matter of fact, it was a second regional shopping center in the county.
Really?
The first one was the Grossmont, was not the Grossmont, but College Campus that they
College
have.
College Grove, yeah.
College Grove. It's now the Campus Center, but it was College Grove that was the first one. The Grossmont Center was a second one. And so what we've been talking with those individuals is that we want to make sure that we can accommodate all their requirements for infrastructure, things of that nature.
Yeah, this is an important economic base for La Mesa. Obviously, all of those retail dollars are very critical. Do you believe it's going to stay as a shopping center, or as some have mentioned, is it possible that it could turn into condominiums or something else?
One of the things that they've talked to us in general terms, one of the things they've assured us that they're going to maintain it as a shopping center. The other thing that is being very competitive in the merchandising industry is that more and more people are buying on the internet. Last year, throughout the nation, there was 33% of all the products sold were through the internet.
So how do you compete against that? Is a retail shopping mall still a viable model in this day and age?
What they have to do is make sure that they can accommodate the needs of the public and what the customers are. And there's no doubt that they have indicated to us that perhaps they might want to consider some office space there and some apartments, but there are a number of options for them.
Would that be instead of or in addition to?
In addition to.
Interesting.
Yeah, there are some stores in there that really have slowly but surely lacked the competition that they need, or they have been struggling to survive because of the nature of the business. Mm-hmm. And so those may be the ones that they would go out there and consider. But I don't want to prejudge what they're going to be doing. They're going to be telling us, and we're going to be working with them. And, of course, there is a compromise that we have to address from time to time with them. But there have been very good tenants and residents of La Mesa.
That'll be exciting to see what happens there. In terms of economic development or redevelopment, what are some other ideas that you have for La Mesa in terms of other industries, perhaps, you know, that could bring in some revenues?
One of the things that I did about 3 years ago is that we were looking at some of our ordinances and zoning issues, and I noticed that we had an ordinance that was almost 50 years old that prohibited any microbreweries or any crushing of grapes, things of that nature. So we spoke with the people at San Pasqual, and they had a storefront in the village, but they were doing all their crushing of grapes and processing in Pacific Beach. And when we processed that ordinance, that gave them the opportunity and the desire to move into La Mesa. So they do that, and right now they're doing that in La Mesa. In addition to that, we now have three proposed microbreweries that are coming into the city.
Wow.
And we're supporting them as aggressively as we possibly can.
Yeah. Craft brewing and wineries are becoming big business for East County, actually. I know Ramona has just exploded, for example. There's 70 wineries up there, wineries and vineyards in Ramona alone now. When we started the magazine, there were maybe 40 in the entire county. And craft brewing, San Diego has developed a national reputation as a leader in craft brewing, according to the various magazines that cover that industry. How big a business do you think this could become for La Mesa?
Well, the issue is that East County, in that regard, only has maybe one, and I think it just opened in El Cajon. But the reality happens to be that
I think there's a few of them. There's maybe three or four at least that I can think of now, but that just shows how fast it's growing.
They are growing rather rapidly. So I think it has a significant place. You know, people really are very selective in the various products that they drink or whatever the case might be.
Right.
So I think it's an opportunity for them to go ahead and really take advantage of that market.
Mm-hmm. Art, what is your vision for the Civic Center, including a new city hall? You've been outspoken on this. Some of the other candidates have said they don't really see a need for it. Can you explain why this is important to you, to the people of La Mesa, and perhaps to the employees of the city of La Mesa?
We have been fortunate tonight. We've struggled very hard, and we worked very diligently to make sure that we had all the new public facilities built brand new. The only thing that we don't have is a new civic center, a new city hall.
Mm-hmm.
And if you walk into that place, you can see just the facade. You have access to the customers, and that's fine. But when you get to the back or the bowels of the building, these employees are working in cubicles that are 4 square feet throughout the whole area. Now, if you may look at the back of the City Hall, we have trailers. One is a temporary trailer that's been there temporary for 24 years. The other trailer, we have two of them. The other one has been temporary for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to provide a work environment for the employees. Now, it's been documented that if you have a good work environment, the productivity of the employees will really significantly increase, and you can see that at the police and fire stations, things of that nature. But that's an old building, and we're spending a lot of money in just maintenance mm-hmm. when it could very well be devoted to a new facility. So we're working aggressively on that.
There you go. Is there funding that's been allocated already for that? Or if not, where would you find the funding for it?
Well, Miriam, there is no funding, but this is the beauty if you happen to be a leader and if you happen to be visionary, like I like to suggest that we are. We have three major parcels of land in La Mesa that are undeveloped.
Yeah.
Right now, we have invited some people to go ahead and provide some suggestions and recommendations.
So that includes the site of the old police station that was torn down?
Well, that's being debated yet with the State Department of Finance. But we have we have 3.5 acres up there by the Briarcrest Park.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have all that property, almost 2.5 acres, right behind City Hall. I'm a firm believer in private-public partnerships. Those pieces of land are extremely valuable in terms of its location and its value. My definition of public-private partnership is finding a good developer and will say, okay, we have this valuable piece of land. You can go ahead and build something that accommodates the city or the city wants, but in turn, we also want you to go ahead and either provide us with some revenue or build us a new city hall. And that's exactly where we're going.
There you go. Now, you have been called the Green Mayor for taking the lead on environmental issues and sustainability. I recall years ago you were the first mayor in the region to sign the U.S. Mayor's Climate Change Pledge, for example. You started a sustainability commission. Can you give us a couple more examples of what you have done to foster sustainability for La Mesa? And also, maybe more importantly in this day and age, what more do you believe still needs to be done in that regard?
We have been in the forefront in addressing those issues about the environment. And right now we are really facing an issue that is really critical because a lot of people just dismiss environmental issues. And I'm talking about climate change and its impact on the environment.
So to be very clear, you believe climate change is real and that man is contributing to causing it?
Yes, I do. There are a number of scientific periodicals that are written about climate change and things of that nature, but eventually they have a significant impact on all communities for that matter. Mm-hmm. Look what's happening with the California right now. We haven't had rain in 1,037 days in
That's
California. We have – the problem that's happening is that there is less water to be used for portable use, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But the reality happens to be that we have to educate the younger kids and the public – as to how to go ahead and protect all those issues that we have that are really kind of a finite product.
Does La Mesa have enough water? Are they in danger of running out of water? And are there steps that should be taken to protect La Mesa's water supply for the future?
Well, one of the things that's taken place is that the Helix Water District is a provider of water to all of most of East County. They have three other agencies. But we work very closely with them. And what we've done to make sure that there are no breaks in our pipes, things of that nature, we've installed brand-new water pipes, water mains, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. They install the water mains. We install the pipes and the
So you're not losing millions of gallons
exactly
when some pipe bursts.
So the reality happens to be is that there is a significant shortage. We are now into phase two of the drought conditions, and eventually they're going to go and restrict it even significantly more. And the other thing that's going to happen is it could very well be that some of the agencies will have water cops like they do in North County and in the San Bernardino area and in Santa Barbara, and you get fined $500 for every time you abuse the violation of those particular...
But that would not be the city. That would be the
water district
would be doing that. Okay. Let's talk about finances a little bit. Can you give us kind of the big picture art on what type of shape the city is in financially? We've been through some rough years where we've seen some local cities just teetering financially. But how is La Mesa doing right now in terms of its revenues and expenses?
We're very fortunate that about 4 years ago, we started enhancing the reserves. Before, we had about 15% of our total budget was in reserves. Mm-hmm. Because of recommendations and criticisms by some of the bonding companies that we had, they suggested that we have a 45% reserve base in our budget, and we do that right now. Mm-hmm. It's almost about $8 million or $9 million in reserves. The other thing, too, about our budget is that we are very frugal in how we do things. And so to that degree, we make sure that we invest only in those things that we don't call it an expense. It's an investment in those products or services or materials that we need. Now, in terms of other finances, the biggest source of revenue for any public agency anymore is now sales tax. In the olden days, it was property tax. So it's important that we go out there and cultivate businesses and attract new businesses into the area. So from a fiscal standpoint from the city, we have a balanced budget. We're in great shape. Of course, we have some challenges with our retirement funds, but those are the things we're addressing at this point.
What are your views on pensions and labor agreements? Do you believe they're good the way they are? Are any cuts needed? And if so, where?
You know, that's a topical issue that a lot of people like to discuss without knowing fully well what the benefits mm-hmm. and the liabilities are. First of all, a community is made up of people, and that community is well served through its employee force. We have 254 employees that are the most successful, the most professional employees ever. I'm a firm believer, and I initiated the recommendation that they have a salary increase this year. They had not had a salary raise in 7 years.
Wow.
And yet our employees were committed to go out there and do all kinds of good work.
Yeah, so you believe in rewarding that loyalty.
Absolutely. That's the thing that we have to do to make sure that we maintain those employees. We have actually lost about 7 highly professional individuals who have left for other agencies simply because they were provided a better salary increase, you know.
Yeah, okay. Another source of revenues for the city is grants. Can you tell us about what experience you have in identifying or writing grants that have successfully funded, and how important is it to have somebody at the helm with that experience, in your view?
Well, you talked earlier about the various things that we do, attending meetings at the national level.
Yeah.
That is exactly where you learn what these grants are being discussed or made available. And so from my perspective, the Safe Route to Schools grants is something that I learned about at a U.S. Conference of Mayors in Miami about 8 years ago. I came back to staff and suggested, I've never heard this before.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that Caltrans has these monies. Let's talk about it. So as a result, we have, as I mentioned before, we have picked up about $3.5 million in Safe Route to Schools, which means we're putting in new sidewalks, things of that nature. The other issue is dealing with SANDAG. If you happen to be on the board and you're aware of all the various monies that SANDAG is allocating, you have to make sure that staff applies for specific grants. In that particular case, we've probably picked up about $7 million in grants through SANDAG in the last maybe 7 years. Those are the kinds of grants that we really need. And it's important because revenue is very finite from different sources. The state keeps cutting back some of our opportunities to make money. So grants are always available, but you have to scan the environment to make sure that you're there and getting your fair share.
The mayor's race is, in theory, a nonpartisan race. Both you and your opponent happen to be registered Republicans. La Mesa now has a strong majority of Democratic registration, interestingly. How important do you believe it is to reach across the aisle? And also, we should note, your opponent sought out and got the endorsement of the Republican Party. What are some of your major endorsements, Art?
Well, first of all, in terms of endorsements, I think what you really have to do is you have to seek out those individuals who can be beneficial to your community and the residents, not just political parties. Now, I'm very honored to have the endorsement of Tony Atkins, who is the Speaker of the Assembly,
right?
The fourth most powerful office. I have the endorsement of our Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, and I also have the endorsement of the leadership for SANDAG, Jack Dale, who's a chair. And we have Jim Janning, who is the first vice president, and
so Don
Higginson.
Bipartisan. That's a strong bipartisan endorsement. You've mentioned both Republicans and Democrats among your endorsers.
Well, it's key to make sure that you don't commit yourself to subscribing to a principle or philosophy that is espoused by just a political party. So what you wind up doing, if you just focus on one particular party, you wind up disenfranchising the balance of the other community members who aren't of that political faith, if you will.
Okay. Art, you have stated that if you're elected, this will be your final term of office. What do you most hope to accomplish if you're reelected as mayor of La Mesa?
I want to make sure that we go ahead and maintain the professional staff that we have right now. Mr. Witt has been under tremendous pressures to go ahead and subscribe to certain guidelines that some of the council members want. To his credit, he's steadfast in saying we can't do that.
So the city manager.
The city manager. The other thing I want to make sure is that we wind up developing those projects that we have at this point that are vacant land. More importantly, to go ahead and provide the employees with a good workplace in a new civic center, a new city hall.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, again, is to go ahead and make sure that the character of this community is not destroyed through unwarranted development.
There you go. And that certainly is important to all of the people who live in La Mesa as it enters its next 100 years.
Yes.
Are there any issues we haven't specifically discussed that you believe are important to the city and that you would like our listeners to know about, Art?
Well, I would want the voters to judge our past history, our records, and our qualifications, and then find out just exactly what our vision for this community has been and is. Those are the kinds of things that I go ahead and lay before the public. Accessibility is really critical. The public can go ahead and reach me anytime they want. We're open to discussions. We meet with them on a daily basis and on a weekly basis. So those are the kinds of things. I bring a record of accomplishments, and those are the qualifications that I offer the public, accessibility, and their voice is I'm very concerned about those things. I represent them. I represent 100% of all the residents, not just members who are of a political faith or of a certain perspective or view.
Thank you very much. Listeners, we have been speaking with the mayor of La Mesa, Art Madrid. Art, thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Miriam, thank you for the invitation.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report for the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ. People who live near wind turbines have long complained about ear pain and pressure, dizziness, and hearing loss. This includes some neighbors of wind turbines in San Diego's East County and neighboring Imperial County. Now, a scientific study offers an explanation of why this can occur. The scientists studied the effects of low-frequency noise on 21 healthy people ages 18 to 28. After exposure to low-frequency sound for just 90 seconds, 17 of the 21 participants had oscillations and measurable changes in the cochlear portion of the ear, which is essential for both hearing and balance. The inner ears of people were, quote, drastically, unquote, altered after exposure to low-frequency noise, according to the study, and living close to wind turbines may lead to severe hearing damage or even deafness. Those are the findings of scientists from the University of Munich, Germany, who conducted the study, which was published in the Royal Society's Open Science Journal on October 1st. Dr. Marcus Drexel, one of the authors of the report, said the study might help to explain some of the symptoms that people who live near wind turbines report, such as sleep disturbance, hearing problems, and high blood pressure, the London Telegraph reports. Dr. Drexel added that scientists don't yet know what happens to people living near wind facilities who are exposed to low-frequency sounds for long periods of time. Local residents living near wind turbines have complained to elected and regulatory officials about health symptoms they believe are caused by the wind turbines, but thus far, their complaints have fallen on deaf ears. With more industrial-scale wind turbines proposed in East County and a massive new wind project currently under construction just over the border in the Tecate area, it remains to be seen when or if officials will hear such concerns or take action to protect the health of those living near existing or proposed wind energy projects.
This is Keith Langhorne with an important health bulletin from the County of San Diego. The County's Health and Human Services Agency is asking for the public's help to identify people who may have been exposed to rabies during the Del Mar Mud Run at the Del Mar Fairgrounds on Saturday, October 4th. A runner said that a bat had landed on him during the run. The bat was captured and submitted to the county for rabies testing, and the county public health laboratory confirmed the bat was infected with rabies. County health officials are concerned that the runner and other people may have directly handled the rabid bat. Anyone who knows the identity of the runner who discovered the bat or anyone who believes they were potentially exposed to the bat are urged to contact the County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency as soon as possible at 619-692-8499. Health officials would like to interview anyone who may have come in contact with the bat as soon as possible to determine if they were potentially exposed to rabies. Event participants and observers that had no contact with the bat are not at risk for rabies. Rabies is a preventable viral disease that is most often transmitted through the bite of a rabid animal. Although rare, transmission may also occur if the saliva from a rabid animal comes in contact with a person's eyes, nose, mouth, or open wound. Symptoms of rabies in people can take weeks or even months to develop after exposure to a rabid animal has occurred. Once symptoms develop, rabies is almost always fatal. However, prompt treatment following exposure to the virus will prevent the disease.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.